we're looking for on VaynerMedia or my team, people that are creators, video and picture people, designers and animators or creators or illustrators or whatever you are. Do you make pictures and videos and write words and come up with ideas for things that sell? We're looking for creators that are less about brand, but more about selling DNA. So if I had to sell wine or sneakers, get it now? Or for clients, if they needed a conversion, have you done creative copy or design or video for conversion-based activities? People that have actually bought something, not awareness, not brand, sales DNA in your creativity. If you have, there's a link in my profile now. Profile now. So you can join our team. Hope to see you in the halls, at least the virtual halls, soon.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Brand Minds presents The Business Summit. Gary Vaynerchuk.
Hey, Gary. Nice to see you, man. Welcome to Brand Minds. I've seen you 3 years ago when I met you, and you inspired me to create content for entrepreneurs, and so thank you, man, and welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here, and congratulations in pulling off this incredible virtual event.
Thank you very much for everything you are doing for this event and for the entire entrepreneurial community in the world. So we'll have 55 minutes of questions, and I have 15 to 20 questions for you that will squeeze a lot of value from you. For our excited audience, they waited for you the whole day. You are the head of the line for today. This is the last meeting. So I will read them one by one to be specific and explicit. So if you are ready, we can start.
I'm ready.
Okay, cool. So let's start with business, and I will keep some personal questions at the end. First question in business area. What is the main strategy to leverage the business growth in COVID-19 crisis?
So I think the first thing that people have to look at is being self-aware and really understanding what they can or cannot accomplish during this time. Obviously, if you're a restaurant or a concert venue or something of that nature, it's going to be very difficult for you to salvage the situation. On the flip side, if you're a restaurant that can go to local delivery or a conference that can go to digital and virtual, you can. And so I think the biggest thing is to not dwell about what has happened and what you cannot do, and really, really, really focus on what you can do and what you can do about it. And so for me, what is your product and service? How has it actually been affected by COVID? And how do you then take advantage of the new world we live in? Whether that's creating a direct-to-consumer e-commerce situation, whether that is creating a new product that services the market. There's been clothing brands that have started manufacturing masks. So to me, it's about adjusting to the reality. And I noticed from a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of them have cried about the situation. And the problem is that doesn't change the situation. So self-awareness and innovation are really the two pillars that are going to help people. And then the other thing is, and I'm sure we'll get into questions around this, what is your content and media strategy for the internet at this time?
True. But you know, innovation at some point could be in a way disturbing, because even this event, no one seen a setup like this. It's like it's been recorded. It's you know, it's so live and so rich of information that is, you know, in this period, it can be, in a way, difficult for people to understand the 10 steps in innovation that you are doing, because that's the thing that is happening right here in BrandMind. So what about this? What about if this crisis and this COVID-19 generate maybe a leap of innovation that is too much for the consumer?
The consumer is king. So, you know, I don't even, you know, it's, and I appreciate your reaction. I'm blown away by people who try to fight against the consumer. You know, I see people innovate. I've been in, you know, Silicon Valley, startup, social media, digital media, for a very long time, and everybody was always innovating around me. And when I watched entrepreneurs get mad at the customer for not adopting, I'll give you a good example, QR codes. I had so many entrepreneurs 7-8 years ago working on QR code innovation. And when they were struggling after 2 years, they were blaming the customer. These idiots, they don't know what to do with it. They don't get how good it is. And I said, that is the most asinine way to think about a problem in business. The customer is always right. It's true. You know, if to your point, if we over innovate during this time, if people overreact to COVID and say, oh my God, nobody's going into the office ever again. You know, we have to make everything virtual. I'm gonna bet my whole life on just virtual. They're gonna lose because it's gonna be a mix. It's gonna be a mix. And so, you know, for me, that's why I laughed when you said that, you know, like there's only the customer to me.
Sure. And keeping in mind that we are passing through this period with COVID-19, what are the top three qualities of an entrepreneur now in this area that we are just starting?
You know, I think the characteristics are the top three characteristics always. I actually think we're starting to see the other side of entrepreneurship now. You know, over the last decade, it's been so easy and people forgot. So much money, such great economies, so much money being printed, so much money being deployed. I think people lost their way. I think people got confused. And so for me, this is a game of very simple, real long-term truths. For example, an entrepreneur is somebody who looked at COVID and coronavirus and went immediately into action to address whatever vulnerabilities she or he had. You know, an entrepreneur was really tested during this time. This was, you know, a very real thing. And most people just have been dealing with rosy colored glasses and situations. So, you know, our entrepreneur is always ready to be the last line of defense. She is, and he is somebody that is always ready to innovate.
That's one.
You know, so to me, they're a firefighter is number one. Like a firefighter in real life, they're always ready to, they could be sleeping and they have to address something.
Sure.
Number two, they're an innovator. They're looking at the situation and they're saying, this is not working anymore. Let me change it. And I'm going to sell this, or I'm going to change my service and do that. And number three, I think that they are one that can communicate with their audience and with, more importantly, the people that work for them. They're truly a leader, because an entrepreneurial business will never survive because the ideas are too crazy. The risk is too high if you're not really a great communicator. People won't jump on board and support you and take that risk along with you. And so I think number three, they're a communications leader. Firefighter, innovator, communications leader.
That's cool. And I think we've had a lot of fake entrepreneurs in the last 5 to 7 years because the economy was 100%. Growing. And now we will see who's really entrepreneur or who's maybe a self-employed in his company. So last question about COVID, and then we go
to another. Hold on one second. I have to give a shout out to Blau Matthias, who just tweeted at me a nice picture of me on the screen and said that he's happy to see me here. Big shout out, Mate Electra. So for everybody who's watching right now, since we are live, feel free to take photos and tweet at me. It's Gary VEE. It adds to the energy. I like the energy of the room. So I'm innovating right now, my friend, right? I have a big public speaking career because I love interaction with the crowd. Thank God you're here, because I've done a couple where I'm just speaking and it's not the same because I'm not getting the feedback. You responding in laughter to my laughter of that first question about the, or second question about customers, that helped me. Sure. Right now, you know, Blau, Matthias tweeting the picture and saying what he's thinking about what I'm saying, that's helping me. And so knowing that I'll be doing a lot more virtual the rest of my life, everybody who's watching, please hit me up on Twitter right now with a screenshot and an observation. It will add to the nuance. Keep going.
Cool. So last question about COVID. Has this crisis affected your business? And if so, in any way, and how did you react it?
it affected the business quite a bit. You know, VaynerX, our production company, which films live videos, has taken a massive hit and lost half its revenue. And I responded by letting go and furloughing a lot of employees and being upfront with them and trying to do the best I can for them. But there was no way out. Vayner Speakers, the speaking bureau, I lost 35 speeches. That was a lot of revenue for me, all gone. We had to let go of some people, but I didn't let go of my leaders in either one of those two companies. I've just taken on those losses because I know they'll be tomorrow.
That's Vayner a good Media, insight. That's a good insight because right? You made the difference right? Between some of them and the others, right?
That's right. You know, Vayner Media initially took a huge hit, lost some clients, had clients stop paying, hurt our cash flow. We have bills to pay. So we also had to do some layoffs, but we've been very aggressive. And I've been working 15 hours a day on Zoom, 12 hours a day on Zoom, business developing, trying to find new clients. So, you know, it's amazing how much I enjoyed this very painful, and that's the word I would use, chapter, because I was prepared for it. Mm. We pivoted, we started doing virtual happy hours to do business development. I started checking in on employees. We spoke to the employees. We went through a lot. And so it's been very affected. Our reaction has been very effective. I promoted my general counsel, Mark Yudkin, to the COO position because he was on his way to being there. So he's been a great partner of mine. So many of my leaders have stepped up and we're a better organization for it.
Cool. So we are moving forward to one of the subjects that, you know, is very important for you, attention, getting the attention. So one of the questions related to this subject is, what are your recommendations for entrepreneurs and startups founders to earn media attention? Because you managed in a way to do it. So what do you recommend? What recommendations do you have for them?
Do high risk, high reward activities that are newsworthy, that are around good ideas, that are authentic. You know, by putting yourself out there in content, that is going to lead to media attention. But that depends on how good or charismatic or smart or creative you are. It's hard to say to somebody, be creative, right?
Of course.
It's like saying to somebody, be a great football player, and then you'll be in the World Cup. Well, no kidding, but you know how? The answer is you have to practice. Everybody who's watching right now, and I appreciate a lot more tweets are coming through, so it's great to see all of you. You know, Sander N and Tanace Paul right now, who just tweeted at me, if they want attention, they need to create a piece of content or a physical situation. But think backwards. Think like a headline writer. Think like a newspaper man or woman. Think like an anchor on TV. For example, if you sell coffee, why not make a $500 cup of coffee that you sell at your place? That's crazy. But that's also the kind of thing that the news outlets may pick up on and be like, have you heard there's a new cafe in Romania that's selling $500 cups of coffee? There better be gold in that coffee, you know? And so you have to reverse engineer what would stop somebody. So it's either very good quality content that over a consistent period of time, I did Wine Library TV for 18 months really well with a good personality. And then somebody asked me to be on TV for the first time every day for 18 months. Hmm. So it takes time.
So talkability and also thinking about the newspapers like a customer. What do they need? What do they need in order to write something about me? Cool. Another question related to the same thing, it's which brand should our participant build first, business or personal? Because, you know, we always think it's the egg or the chicken. Who's first? Who's driving the things?
Well, speaking from a one-person place, I built business first. You know, a lot of people forget my story. You know, from 22 to 34 for 12 years, I worked and built a very large e-commerce and retail business for my father.
It was a strategy, or it was a strategy, or it's just the natural thing.
There was no options. There was no personal brand building.
Sure.
It was 1998, right? Today, I think you can do both. I would personally, if my sister asked, which she did, and she's doing it in real estate, and what I would tell everybody here, I would do both. I would be building my business, and I would also be documenting. Don't speak like an expert if you're just building it. I would be documenting the journey, sharing my feelings, journaling to the world about my experiences, my learnings, my difficulties. And so that's what I would do. So to me, I don't think it's an either or. I think that the answer is both.
In these times. So you're very active on every platform. So, and I want to ask you some things about LinkedIn and of course TikTok, but first LinkedIn. What is the biggest mistake people make on LinkedIn?
Underestimating it.
Mm. Why?
I don't think, because I think right now, professionally, it may be the single most interesting platform in social and digital and content media. It is got an enormous audience. It has, I mean, anybody who's watching right now who's in B2B, if you are not taking your content strategy on LinkedIn extremely seriously, you're making a massive mistake. It should be your number one sales channel. Mm-hmm. It's acting like Facebook 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. What do I mean by that? You create a LinkedIn account, you post content, and you're getting organic awareness. You post and nobody follows you, 1,000 people see it. You can't do that on Instagram. You can't do that on Twitter. You can't do that on Facebook anymore. Besides TikTok, there are only two platforms right now at scale globally that are platforms you can sign up for today, make a video, post it, and 500 people will see it that have never heard of you. Mm-hmm. So for most people who don't have money to amplify every piece of creative or any piece of creative, they rely on organic reach. The problem is all the big platforms, Twitter, YouTube, all these other, organic reach is very difficult because of the saturation of content. LinkedIn right now, whether it's B2B content or B2C content, if you're a health and wellness
even
expert.
B2C? Even B2C in LinkedIn?
Correct, this is why I'm excited. If you're a health and wellness influencer, putting out a piece of content on LinkedIn right now would be just interesting to see what you would get out of it, just to see what people would see, because the people on LinkedIn are still human beings.
Of course, but some of them will comment. This is not Facebook, go to Facebook, this is a more professional area. So what do we do?
My friend, when I posted business videos for the first time in 2009, every single comment, all of them, were like, hey, wine guy, why are you talking about business? You don't know anything about business, talk about wine.
True. So what about TikTok? You are posting on TikTok. So you think TikTok is a platform that we should create, let's say, a long tail platform for a younger generation? It's an investment. It's a long-term investment, or is just a quick platform to sell or to promote?
Every platform is long-term investment when it's hot. I think of TikTok and every social network like a television show in the 80s. If you think back to the 80s or to the era of television, when a network or a TV show was the number one hit, everybody wanted to run commercials on it, right? Mm.
True.
No brand or company worried if that show would still be big next year. They just knew it was big now. Some shows went on to have 8 years of being big and they ran commercials the whole time. Other shows were only big for 2 years. For me, two things that people don't understand about TikTok. Number one, there's an ungodly amount of 30, 40, and 50 year olds on the platform. Enormous. Number two, I'm not worried if TikTok's gonna be here in a year or two. Right now it has an ungodly amount of attention, so I will create for it. The mm-hmm. end.
Got it. So, talking about digital campaigns, how can you, maybe you can name three strategies to keep a high level of attention in a campaign. Three things that are very important in order to keep the attention of a campaign, because we've seen a lot of campaigns that are, you know, starting slow or ending slow, and you know, the attention is like energy. You have to keep it, you cannot store it.
First and foremost, number one, two, and three is the idea. Mm. A great campaign marketing strategy is completely at the mercy of the creative idea.
So it's not about tactics?
Oh, it's about tactics, but I'm very, very talented at tactics. So are many people watching and many other people. If it was about tactics, all of our campaigns would work.
True.
Right?
Sure.
It's when the idea and the message and the story is good, along with, to your point, and I know where the question's going, after you put out the video, are you putting out little pieces of content for a month supporting the video to drive to the video? Did you put out content for a month before the video to get insights to figure out how to make the video better? Can you run the media in places like TikTok and LinkedIn where people aren't thinking, but we know there's attention? On tactics and strategy, I'm unstoppable. But I'm at the mercy of the creative.
Very interesting.
I'll take it a step further to make it a little bit more about business. What's fascinating about what I just said, and what's a very important insight of the balance between tactics and ideas, is if you take it up a notch, after you have a great campaign, let's say you got the ideas and tactics right, you're at the mercy of the product. I tell people all the time, you know, people reach out to me, they're like, Gary, you're the best, VaynerMedia is the best, I wanna work with you. I said, cool. Before anything, before I hear any other thing out of your mouth, you understand that if I and our team does our job well, all that we're gonna do is speed up everybody knowing about your product. So if your product and service stink, all I'm gonna do is you're gonna pay me a lot of money to speed up the world knowing that your product stinks.
Of course. Cool. So let's go back to startups and startups environment. I think you get a lot of ideas and a lot of guys that are looking for investment from you. So maybe you have two or three or four things that you expect from a startup in order to invest in this startup. What are the three checkboxes that you need to fill in order to invest time, energy, money, partnership, whatever?
Great question. First thing that I'm going to tell everybody, it's the number one mistake that founders make when they pitch companies. If you do not know the answer to a question, you must acknowledge it. The number one reason I don't invest in companies is because I ask them a question that I know the answer to and they give the wrong answer or they dance around the answer. Mm.
So which one is more, has more penalty from you? Going around the answer or being straightforward? I have a wrong answer, but this is my answer.
They're both the same. It means you don't know the answer. Cool. It means you don't know the answer and that you didn't have the strength or the candor to admit it, which then led to me knowing that you don't know your business as well as I need you to know the business. Because if I know the answer and you don't, that's a problem for me because I'm not gonna be there every day. Number two, what I always look for is, do I believe that human beings will do the thing that the person is telling me they're gonna do within the next 36 months? It's a very important answer. If I don't believe that humans will buy what the person's putting down in the next 36 months, I can't invest because then I'm at the mercy of too much time leading to bad behavior of impatience or wasting money, which is why I didn't invest in any VR companies in the last 5 years, because I don't think it's tomorrow. Three, the thing I need to know is that the entrepreneur, I'm guessing that the entrepreneur I'm sitting in front of is going to be able to deal with things like COVID. Mm. Is the person actually an entrepreneur, or has entrepreneurship and startups and starting your own company become so cool that everybody wants one?
Cool. You know, the first answer that you gave us is very important for us also. We have a show that is a franchise of Shark Tank in Romania, so we have a lot of questions and some of them don't have any answer. And we ask them, you came unprepared, how come? They say, I don't know. I only know about my product, not about the things that you ask me. So they are very much focused on the product or the service, and they don't know the answer for a lot of business questions. So that's, you know, I'm glad that you put the first answer right this one, because it's really important to know a lot of things about the strategy, tactics, vision, everything around the product and service. It's not only, I mean, product and service is just a small part. So thank you very much for this.
Of course. You know, the product is a very, very, very big part. To your proper observation, it's just not the only part. And most engineers and most practical operators don't see that. Business is one in the gray.
Sure.
And actually, I think business is one more or less by how you treat other human beings. First your own employees, then your customers. And I think that is the big misstep of most executions that I see.
Mm. So after the startup, what characteristics do you find, like successful characteristics of a scalable business? How do you see in advance if a business is scalable or not? What do you search?
I'm sorry, one more time, because I'm replying to Sander and with a very nice observation. So I apologize, but I like the humanity of the interaction. What was the question, my friend?
The question was, how do you see the characteristics of a scalable business? What do you search in order to see that, or to, you know, to see in advance that this business could be scalable?
Yeah, two things. Both guesses. Yeah, unless you're looking at data that shows that the business went from 8 to 27 to 30 to 54, and you can see it's on fire, that's just easy. That doesn't take anybody special. But before that, to see it early on that it's scalable, I do two guesses. One, my belief that coconut water or bicycle running or form-fitting t-shirts or red wine or you know, seaweed cookies can and will explode. So that's me guessing. And two, is the person in front of me an entrepreneur or an operator? Because if they're an operator, they won't let it grow fast enough. So very interesting insight. If somebody's classically business trained, they're going to be overly Excel sheet disciplined, and they won't see the moment where it's time to pour lighter fluid, and they need to be an artist to feel the momentum and go hard. And a lot of people are robots and school children, not artists. It is an art form to know if something can get crazy and become crazy quickly in a stable way that's not just based on raising capital and then being underwater and then losing your business 2 years later. That is what I look for in a human.
Interesting. So what's your opinion about the age that we are living now? Is this a good period to start a business or not?
There's never a bad time to start a good business.
Why is that?
Because history told me.
Okay.
Every year of the last 100 years, including world wars, pandemics, global recessions, every single year, substantial businesses were born. There's never a bad time to start a good business.
So people that are postponing this moment are not real entrepreneurs, right?
Well, they might be real entrepreneurs. Their personal situation might not allow them to jump right now. And they're, you know, listen, I do think the more fear you can handle without stress is a complete indicator on your upside as an entrepreneur, or is at least one of the indicators. At the same token, I think it's dangerous to just blanket statement. I think that some people do have circumstances that it would be foolish or way too high risk to. On the flip side, I do find that most people use excuses forever to never start it because they actually aren't it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So I'm going a little bit into an area that you love also, the shopping, entertainment, live streaming, a combination that is new for e-shopping. Is this the future, or how do you see it?
Yes, I think China social networks and soon to be American social networks will continue to see vertically integrated live video content driving to business results for someone. I think that that is real life stuff. And I think that that is 100% something that people should look at. In America, we call it QVC, Home Shopping Network. I'm sure the global audience has their versions of it. But do I believe that if this was, if I was still 23 years old at my daddy's liquor store, would I be doing Wine Library TV live on TikTok Live, or if I was in China, WeChat, or if I was, or soon to be Instagram or Facebook live with links to product and selling product? Yes, I believe I would be doing that.
Mm. Okay. So usually the entrepreneurs are, you know, they fear of losing money. What can you tell them in order to overcome this obstacle, mental, let's say, obstacle?
If you're doing entrepreneurship for money to buy things, you're going to eventually be unhappy. Hmm. So, you know, it worries me when it's about the cars and the private planes and the boyfriends and the girlfriends and the spa treatments and traveling and the money and the Prada bags and shoes and watches, because it's an indication to me that somebody wants the, you know, somebody wants the actual things that come from entrepreneurship more so than that they want the game of entrepreneurship. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And so when somebody loves the game, then they really win. But when somebody's just, you know, doing it for kind of like the stuff, they always lose. So entrepreneurs that just want the money or are scared to lose the money are always vulnerable. And I would ask them to rethink the situation and really assess their lives.
Cool. Because, you know, startups are difficult, and a lot of people expect the results of the entrepreneurship, but they don't see the rest. How important is it is for an entrepreneur to see, to have a mentor or to see his work every day and the effort that he's doing, to see real efforts in the back of the business that drives success?
I want to make sure I understand the question. How important is having a mentor?
Yes, and I can expand the question.
Please.
Because I see a lot of young people that are, you know, they expect to have Prada bags and things like this, but they don't know the effort that an entrepreneur is doing in the back. So how soon a young person who wish to become an entrepreneur should start the mentorship program and the shadowing, let's say, shadowing more than mentorship?
I think it comes down to how you learn. You know, for example, I didn't do mentoring. For me, the way I learn is through listening to the customer. But I think for a lot of people, mentorship was extraordinary and the reason that they were able to succeed. So for me, I'm trying to get some air. It's hot in here. For me, I think that this is an answer that is very, very much personal. You know, for me, I don't think there's a right answer to when or what. Somebody might be like me and started the first 10 years without having mentorship, direct mentorship, but have felt over the last 2-3 years to be in a rut. And now they've decided to, you know, get a mentor. And I think that's right too, or the other way around. You know, some people might have outgrown their mentors and that's okay too. Yeah. So, you know, to me, that's how I think about that.
So how do you qualify your videos? Shadowing, mentoring, documenting, a mix of them?
Meaning the way how do I see my videos for people out there?
Yes, yes.
Context. I think of them as context. I think
so
that
you create the context and they watch how you do it.
I create the content and I hope that they're able to contextualize the information for their real situation and that they're able to extract some value out of it. You know, I'm a unique entrepreneur in that I share a lot of content and for free. And so you usually have people that are running big companies like I do that you never see, or you have a lot of people who share content, but their business is to sell programs to people. Mm-hmm. I'm in a very weird space where I'm running big companies, but also putting out an enormous amount of content. For me, that is me doing two things. One, creating top of the funnel awareness about who I am, which may lead to other business opportunities in the future. And that's 50% of it. And 50% of it is my giving back to the game that I love so much. I feel like I'm giving out a business school for the people that can get value out of a communicator like me, because I'm not for everybody and I understand that. But I think a lot of people have learned more about business through my free content than a lot of money they've spent in schools or programs.
I think we have a last, I have a last question in business, but it's more about personal brand. A lot of them are watching you, a lot of entrepreneurs and content creators are you know, watching your work, and they love the way that you are doing and the fact that you are very famous. But can you please tell us the dark side of being famous in online? If they need to be prepared for something that is really tough and difficult for a human being to, you know, to bear.
Well, look, I tell a lot of my friends, you know, as you probably know, and a lot of people know, I don't really share my personal life. And that's because, you know, I want to keep that in my private soul. Like, you know, meanwhile, I share a lot of content. So I tell people, whatever you share with the world becomes theirs. So, you know, you can't put your baby in every picture and then be mad when somebody says something about your baby.
Of course, you did. Right? It's public.
That's right. So, you know, I think the downside is you've opened up, you know, the ability for people to have opinions about you and share in your life. And that's okay. I do that. I mean, I've opened up the ability for anybody to say anything they want about anything with my business world. And I take on the ramifications. You know, it hurts my feelings when people think I have bad intent, or I'm a huckster, or, you know, doing this because I just care about my, like, that hurts your feelings when you're a human being, but I have to accept that comes with it. So the downside is judgment. And how you handle judgment is often another very big indicator on how much you can succeed in putting yourself out there and building a brand.
What about the haters? How do you manage? I'm sure everyone has haters. How do you manage the relationship with them?
How do I manage what?
The relationship with the haters, with people that are, you know, crossing the line and telling nasty things about you. How do you manage this? Because this is really difficult for a human being to manage this.
I deal with hate with a heavy level of compassion, sympathy, and empathy. If somebody has time to consume my content and deploy hate on me, that's a really not fun place for that person to be in their headspace. I have never in my life spent time consuming somebody to then try to tear them down in the comments.
Cool. We have a lot of people that are commenting also on our social media. So Edward is one of them. He's saying hi, very insistent. So maybe you can wave to Edward and say hi, because we are
Edward.
In a live event. And
I love you, brother.
He was very into it. I want to tell this to Gary. So thank you very much for doing this. So let's go a little bit to personal life, because this is more juicy. Let's talk about, you know, people do you admire in your personal life?
That's a great question. I'm an enormous admirer of kindness. I'm an incredible admirer of someone who's able to be the bigger person in a disagreement. I'm a massive admirer of somebody who is able to deploy work ethic to the extreme, but not at the cost of their mental or physical health. I admire that. And, you know, the first two things I said, my mother is my great hero in those things. And very honestly, the thing I'm most proud of there's a lot of things I'm proud of in myself. There's plenty of things that I wish I did better, but I love the fact that I love what I do for a living, have the ability to have a ton of work ethic because it requires that to create big things. But do not go into depression or sadness or burnout. When I need to sleep 10 hours, I sleep 10 hours. When I need to focus on sports cards for a week because it's just too much, I'm good. When I need to go on vacation and read a book, you know, for 2 weeks, then I'm okay with that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't judge myself when I'm not hustling.
That's a good one. But you know, at the beginning, it was just hustle because you needed to reach and to be here. And now you can slow down. Or what should I understand from
probably,
this?
You know what's funny? I probably work just as much, if not even slightly more, because of technology than I did when I was a kid. No, I think work ethic matters. When you don't have anything, work ethic really, really matters. Like, but again, a lot of people have taken hustle and they've converted it into a word that is a negative word where they burn themselves out. I mean, this is a marathon and I want people to take plenty, you know, like I'm looking to work for, you know, 70 years and, you know, my success did not come because I hustled. My success came because I was kind to my employees and my customers. I was extremely educated and smart in the category of wine. I put in a lot of hours educating myself on modern communications like the internet, email, Google AdWords, YouTube, when most people didn't see it. So, you know, my inner
circles. That's a cool description of hustle. It's more elevated. I like it.
It is more elevated. And you know, to be frank, a lot of my friends and family members and people that have worked with me, they get mad at me because I never talk about being smart. You know, it took a level of talent to recognize in 1996 that e-commerce was going to be humongous.
Of course.
It took a level of talent to be on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all these platforms first and hardest and best. So I am, as I get older and these gray hairs come in, I am trying to be more thoughtful in creating all the nuances of the story, again, as context. There's hundreds of thousands of people that have been more financially and even impact successful than me in business. So this is not about I'm so cool. This is let me give you everything I know. Let me give you everything I know. Because if it helps you and you send me an email and say that I helped your life, that changes, that feels way better to me than an extra $1,000.
Sure. And you also, I think you felt that when you given information, you create space for a new one. It's like we have a finite space
like
of information. So we have to share it in order to receive more. It's like, you know, a bucket full of water and you ask for more. You have to spread a little bit. So I just want to ask you a thing that will be very valuable for our viewers. What do you think, what will be big in 5 years? Because you talked about e-commerce 10 years ago. So right now, Gary V, make a prediction about the future. What industries or product or services it will be really big in 5 years?
I think SMS retail. I think people buying through SMS is going to be big. I think voice activated AI devices like Alexa and Google. People doing more things with their voice. I think that influencer marketing, humans getting money, humans having production companies around them, putting out content on the internet. I think fragmented OTT, micro subscription content plays on top of the internet, streamed through television, the long tail of OTT. Those are the things that stand out for me.
Cool. We're going back to personal, but you know you talked about this, and I think it was juicy enough for our viewers. So we have all of us as entrepreneurs, we have scars because we made a lot of mistakes. Do you have any regrets?
You know, I'm too happy to have regrets, but I will tell you that I made a lot of mistakes. Believe it or not. On stage, I can be very aggressive and candorous, but in real life as a leader, it's taken me a long time to lead with candor because I always led with sweetness and kindness and comfort and leadership and lack of fear, and I'll take care of it. So I regret, not regret, because I really don't regret it. I'm excited that at this stage of my career, I'm getting better at candor and telling my employees when they're not doing a good job, which is big for me, because that's hard for me. And then what was unfortunate was, because it'd be painful for me when they were under delivering and being delusional, it led to me being passive aggressive with them, making comments, you know, or surprising them when I fired them. So that's, you know, I always want to be the best I can be. And so that's not something I'm thrilled about. I could have bet bigger. You know, I was so right about Facebook, Twitter, Uber, all these things. So I could have put bigger bets and would have done better. That's a micro in hindsight. I innovated a lot. I created a lot of things that went on to become bigger things, and I didn't productize them. I just used them on my businesses. Open cart optimization. I'm doing it with WineText right now, text SMS. I just told you it was going to be big in 5 years. It's going great for my dad's business, but I'm not building a Spotify or a Shopify or a WordPress, and I probably should. I probably didn't negotiate hard enough for the right business deal with my dad or my brother, my two partners in my life.
always when it's personal is difficult, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I took my dad's business from a $3 to $60 million business from 22 to 34 years old, and I left at 34 years old and I had nothing, you know? Yeah. And I had to start over, you know, which you can imagine double hurts when haters try to make pretend that my story was my dad gave me something. You know, don't listen to Gary Vee. He started this, or his dad gave.
He was already rich.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's just not the truth. As a matter of fact, I'm in a very rare club of somebody who gave to my dad, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And then my brother and I started VaynerMedia, and he was 22 years old. I'd already had a little bit of the Gary Vee thing going on, and yet I still started that business 50-50 with him. So I didn't do a good job negotiating with my dad and brother, but I don't resent them or regret it. Mm-hmm. One of the great gifts of my life is to give. And you know, so that's it.
Cool. We all have challenges, and you've had challenges in your life, but maybe one of them helped you to grow tremendously. Do you recall one of them? A big challenge that helps you become a better person or a better entrepreneur or a, you know.
Well, I think the biggest challenge.
Because usually behind every challenge is a big opportunity to change, to
100%.
Grow. So how about you?
My father was a very quiet, old school man who didn't talk a lot, was not a good communicator, and was a very rough around the edges immigrant, and I had to figure out from the age of 14 to the age of 34 for 20 years how to work with him. And I think it made me an incredible reader of people. I think it helped me understand how to break through to people. I think one of the reasons I'm such a convincing storyteller and articulator, I feel very in the zone right now in this interview. I feel like people are getting a real insight to a deeper level of me. I'm patient and calmer, so I'm able to get more clarity out of my words. And I think a lot of those skill sets were taught on those 40-minute drives back and forth with my dad, because I had to figure out the angle to change my dad's mind without getting much information from him other than human reaction, which honed my emotional intelligence and consumer behavior skills. I think I'm one of the really strong understanders of human behavior on the internet. And I think a lot of that happened from the challenge of having a non-communicative dad. My dad didn't talk a lot. Yeah. And he stayed very quiet in his own thoughts, but I needed answers for him because I was hungry and I was aggressive and I wanted to build his business for him. And you can imagine that's frustrating and complicated. And I honed those skills and I honed them. And I think it makes me who I am today.
I feel you, man. I have one last question, a personal one. And after this, I will give you a few minutes for a final call to action to the entrepreneurs. And then I will call Pep to give me 2 minutes in order to prepare the room, because we will meet again with a few hundred entrepreneurs for the private conversation that we arranged with you. So thank you very much for everything so far. Time is flying with you. I want to know, how do you see the world in 5 years from now? How Gary is seeing the world? Are you pessimistic? Are you optimistic? And why? What do you see at the horizon?
5 is a fun number. I think we're living through a time right now where we're demonizing a lot of things. I think politically, both in America and the rest of the world, we're pointing fingers. And I think that we are leaning into our differences versus our commonalities. It's creating a lot of tension and a lot of negativity. I think life is how you see it. Whatever you're looking for, you will find. And if you go on Twitter right now, or Facebook, or Instagram, or WeChat, or Weibo, or Line, or Instagram, or YouTube, podcasts, if you're looking for negativity, there's an unbelievable amount.
Yeah, and you get into the loop anyway. And you get into the loop of negativity, and then you are...
That's right. If you look, by the way, as the counter and the finish to that statement, if you go on all those same platforms right now and you look for positivity and happiness and opportunity, it's loaded. Loaded.
Sure.
So my hope is that 5 years from now, my dream, my ambition, my great, great, great want is that in 5 years, we are on the tail end of this era and people are exhausted of spending all their time trying to tear each other down and what makes us different. And we've started the next wave of leaning into each other and building back up. And I think through that, we will see innovation, creativity, joy, and happiness. That's how I see it.
I was leaving space for a call to action, but I think I love this better because it's a message of love and positivity. So,
and listen, we've got 4 more minutes and I'll go to call to action. Let me make this, because to your point, I went very macro. Let me go micro.
Go ahead.
If you are watching this right now and you have not invested the mental, the financial, the effort to build an infrastructure that allows you to create content every single day across as many platforms as possible without burning yourself out and wasting all your money, if you've not found a sustainable mental and financial framework to produce content every single day on the internet, you are making one of the great missteps of your professional and personal careers. And I highly recommend you get serious about content on the internet because it is an absolute leverage point that is controllable by you to change the outcome of your opportunities and your possibilities and the financial impact on every business you're associated with.
Gary, my friend, always a pleasure to talk to you. You are an inspiration for us, and thank you very much for all your time. We will see you in 5 minutes in the private room with the rest of the world changers. Thank you very much. Pep, I think from now, you can take over.
Thank you very much, Christian. Thank you, Gary. You say it's a pleasure to talk to Gary. It's always a pleasure to watch you guys talk. That for me is a thrill. I see that sounds a little creepier than I intended, but it was really a fantastic conversation. So thank you both.
Brand Minds Live.
All right, episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gary. Today's highlighted review is Best Is Yet to Come by Johnny Hates Finding. Finally started listening to and watching Gary V, and now I'm ready and confident enough to just be me. Knowing that is the key to success. Thank you, Gary, for all that you do. Thanks to Johnny Hates Finding. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.